So Kenny Johnson has returned to Many Rivers Books and Tea. He has been a speaker here many times. We invite him to be here as often as it works out for him to be here, because he brings a clarity, a fearlessness, and a generosity of spirit to his interactions with us all here. And that's why you're here, that's why he's here. So please join me in welcoming Kenny Johnson, author of The Last Tussle.
Let's do something. Just throughout this gathering, I normally sit for 15 minutes, then go into a dialogue. Tonight, we'll always see. Why is everybody in the
center?
Oh, boy. I need to come up closer or something. Y'all come up or something. I mean, what's the deal here? Y'all afraid of me? I got horrible. Come on. I'm kind of lonely. You know, I have issues, you know? I got abandonment issues. That's why I'm here, to work with this stuff. Okay.
It didn't work.
It stayed
back.
Except
back here because of the chair.
Yeah, I know. When I go to talks, I'm all the way in the back.
Now, why is that?
Because I am scared of being seen.
Behind.
I told you I got issues.
Behind
that. Yeah, so if you hide out. You know, being an 8 on the Enneagram, when an 8 walks into a room, I don't know if you know about Enneagram, who does, doesn't. But anyway, when I walk into a room, there's a lot of people. I go all the way to the back and I sit because I feel safer that way. I already know everything, so I'm just coming to check it out, to confirm that they're saying what I know. So I don't need to be up close to get the transmission. I already know the transmission. I already got the transmission. So I come in just to confirm that the teacher or the preacher or whatever is doing it right, according to me. So what I'm saying is, throughout this talk, we'll drop, we'll stop, we'll check in, then we'll start again. I have a friend, his name is Arjuna, he's a dance teacher, and he has a thing called Begin Again. So you're dancing, you're doing your thing, 15, 20 minutes in here, you'll relax, you'll stop, and you'll talk for a minute, now let's begin again. And that's the way it is. Is always continually beginning again. But before we can begin, we have to stop and let go. And then we begin again. Then we commence again, you know. I can go, when I saw Rob, how long ago was it, Rob? About a month ago, 2 months ago that I came in?
Well, we had a radio conversation.
Radio conversation, that's right. Yeah.
23rd.
Yeah, and so it's been a while since I've been here. Over a year, right? Over 2 years?
Well, you came into the store
but Sato.
In November or something like that.
Yeah, but I just now, I came and I saw Rob. Sometimes, let me see if that's space for me, you know. See if I can do a small gathering, you know, and see what happens and see what, you know. And so I'm happy to be here. Good to see you. I love this place because real people come out and just talk and share. So it's not people coming to get fixed and not people just coming just to share. I don't know about you. You might be coming to get fixed. So she's coming to get fixed. So I got one that needs to be fixed. Okay. I was writing an email to my wife. So I said, "Oh, honey, so and so, so and so," and I put a little heart. "Oh, so and so, so and so," and I put a little guy with cool sunglasses. You know the emoji things, right? At the bottom, she always called me Mr. Fix It. I said, "Oh yeah," and my name is Mr. They had two little tools, a hammer and some pliers, Mr. Fix It. Because you see, I'm always trying to fix her. Mm-hmm. But that's what guys do. If my car is broke, I want to fix it. I mean, fix it now. You know, my wife would say, "Well, the car's broke." And, well, fix it. Now, the car I can fix. And I said, "Well, honey, you know, we talked earlier." I said, "Well, honey, your stomach is this, or this here, this here." I said, "Why don't you do this here?" "I don't need fixing." And so we have this thing. I can fix some things, and some things I can't fix. Her, I can't fix. So I'm sorry, darling. I can't fix you.
I'm just kidding.
I know. Good. But now that we're talking, we're just kidding. What do you really want fixed? Because let's say something. Okay, let's go a little deeper. Okay. When I got married, we was laughing, jokey, hee, ha ha. And as time went on, I realized those jokes were really serious conversations that weren't spoken. So, oh, you want to fix that? Open. Go get your, you know that. You know, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Open the hammer. That's how we fix that. No. But speaking of fixing, I've been married since February 1st, 2012. The marriage was up and down, as our relationships are. Then we got to a point where it was make it or break it. So I said, "Okay, I want to stay in this marriage. I want to stay married. I want to stay in this relationship. I don't want to do like I did all the other ones." "Okay, I'm cool. I'm out of here. Come on in, brother." And so what happened was, we had a big blow up. You know, it was old joking. It was a whole bunch of stuff, a big blow up. And I realized that I had to go deeper. I had to find a way to keep the marriage together. And it was so clear that neither one of us had any more energy. Like, what do we do? We're trying to how we fix this. You know, we looked at our head and we saw that we was angry. We was, you know, like, what do we do here? And so I said, "You know, this is a job for super therapists." So I called my friend, she called a therapist, she told me to call this therapist, I called a guy, I took my wife in, "Come on in, brother." My wife and I went, and now we go once a month, and what he tells me to do, every morning, "Kenny, you got to do your work, your practice." I know in the satsang world, in the Advaita Vedanta, non-duality world, there's no practice, there's nothing to do, there's nobody here. BS. That's the experience of letting go. Ah, you have the aha moment. Wow, and you realize the limitlessness of yourself. Like, I can let everything go and be at peace. Ah, yes you can. Now, that's just the beginning. Of a journey of letting go, letting go, and letting go, and letting go. Not just letting go. Okay, I'm walking across the street. Today I was in the parking lot. And I'm walking across the parking lot, and I'm walking kind of slow, but. And this woman, she got this brand new Nissan Murano, copper colored, and she's sitting in front of me. I'm walking. I'm not running, I was walking. All of a sudden, she said, "Vroom!" She gunned it.
Really?
I said, "Okay." And immediately, I went back to the streets. Mm-hmm. I became a hoodlum. I became a thug in my mind. But I did my practice yesterday morning. So I saw her drive down there, and she parked, and she sat there. And the thug in me wanted to walk up to that car and just read her the riot act. Mm-hmm. But I stood there, so just walked to Whole Foods, then come back. And I took a walk, and I let it go. That was my way of not engaging. I could, at one time, I would have been knocking on her window, saying, Miss, you know, or him, or whomever. And that, so, but I said, wait a minute here. Was it that important? Is it really that important that I let her know how I feel? I already know how I feel. I'm pissed. I was afraid.
Yeah.
I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. I was guilty. Everything came up in that moment. She gunned it. She don't like black people. The whole thing. So I walked and I came back and I said, I'm so glad I walked away, because I could have walked there and it could have been, I could have frightened a woman. She could have called the police. Even though I felt that she was wrong, she may have been in the right. She may have been one of her business ones, so she could rest. She might have been, I don't know. But I had to let it go. So it's always letting go on the major level and the mundane level. I would say mundane was the parking lot, the car. Major is you lost somebody in the relationship or whatever, or you lost your job. Like our friend here is okay. Mm-hmm. Our friend, she lost her mom last week. She's grieving. You know, just, and they were close. But she has to let it go. I said, this is a place to come and to get some mojo, some juju, some support, some wisdom, you know, to deal with it. And just, she was sharing, then the gentleman right next to it, he said, I lost my wife years ago. This would be my emotions. And they're still fresh. All you have to do is just tap into it, think about it, and it's just there. They haven't gone anywhere. Those feelings, what happened yesterday, it's the emotions and feelings are still here. But I don't act them on. I'm not acting upon it. I'm just allowing the emotions and the feelings to come through me. And I'm not trying to hold them and damn them and stuff them. Just let them come up. So I say, satsang is the place where you come, you let everything out. Don't hold on to it. Good to see you. What's your name?
Will.
Will. Good to see you, Will. Hmm? I haven't seen you before.
Yeah,
I have. Have I seen you before?
I don't recall.
You look familiar.
Jeffrey White Bear?
The name, good name. Please meet you, Jeffrey. And your name, sir? Your name?
Will.
Will, okay, I'm sorry, Will.
Andy.
Well,
I've met you before.
Yeah, I know. I'm
saying.
Yeah.
Corinne,
yeah.
My name is Terry.
Terry. Oden?
Jim.
Hillary.
And let's see.
Natalie.
Again, one more time. I got bad memory.
Dave.
Joan.
Leanne.
So everybody know everybody. Not just for my sake, but everybody knows. You know, everybody's voice is in the room. The energy is in the room. That's why I do that. If it's small groups, I try to get everybody involved, engaged. This is not. I'm not an entertainer. I don't have a guitar. I don't have a saxophone. But I'm here because a lot of people come to these talks to get entertained. No entertainment. I mean, I am entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Mm. Mm.
Huh?
No, obvious.
He thought I wanted to say. Oh.
And this is where I open the floor up for people to say something, ask questions, a little bit about myself. I spent 20 years in prison. I was a career criminal. I wrote a book. Where'd it go? Oh, there. I wrote a book called The Last Hustle. 2010, we got it published. I work mainly with the incarcerated, those in prison. I go to like this next month, April, I'm going to Oregon to work with some prisoners in Salem, Eugene, and some other place. I forget. So I work the incarcerated whenever invited. When I wrote the book, The Last Hustle, I wrote it was about my life as a criminal, as a young man in the Midwest, as a hustler, as a thief, as a criminal, and how I was going in and out of prison. I wasn't really a dope fiend or a drug addict, but I used drugs and alcohol. But my main thing was trying to, you know, get rich. You know, it was all about money. I didn't realize until here lately how poor we were. And somewhere in my mind, I thought I was, in my mind, I've always felt that I'm wealthy. But the reality is that I was born in poverty and I'll probably die in poverty. You know, it's that simple. But I realized that as I would look, I've been looking back at my life, and I said, well, I haven't really been broke. I haven't really been, you know, without resources. I haven't really been, you know, like I was coming down the street here, and I saw a young man and his dog, and they were homeless. You know, he's in there having a conversation with his dog. I said, man, how would that feel to have your only companion is your dog and you're homeless? How would that feel? You know, I had to stop and check in, you know, like, wow, man. And so, what I'm saying is this. Life is beautiful and life is hell at the same time. Can you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
For the longest, I thought life was going to be this, I don't know. You know, I have, as the older you get, the more you realize, wait a minute, all those thoughts and dreams, and they're not going to manifest. Why was I thinking like, who gave me that, you know, that who told me, you know, where did this stuff come from, you know? So now I'm boiling all down to, okay, what really matters is that I stay present. I stay present as much as possible. And how does that look? Oh.
I'm trying a little pot here, you know, a boiling pot of water.
Mm-hmm. And that's
that is, you know, you got the present, right? Everything boils down into
it. Yes, sir. Oh, I like to boil down. You got to worry about it.
There you go.
It's all relevant. It's all. I was doing a satsang in Bali, and my wife, at that time, she was somebody else's girlfriend. She came, and I said, "We're all one." Any questions? And my wife said, oh boy, he's not going to be famous at all. I said, honey, but I was telling the truth. We're all connected. We're all one. There's only one awareness, one consciousness. Different bodies and skins and colors, but we're all one. She said, yeah, but the way you said it. Like, okay, done. Yes.
If you would, could you tell us a little bit about your practice, if you feel like sharing?
Yeah, yes. I tell you why, I'm good, because I can ramble on forever. But how my practice actually solidified itself was, like I said, I got married, my wife and I had a big blow up back in 6 or 7 months ago. I said, we got to go to the therapist. I sent the therapist, and the therapist says, Kenny, what are you doing? What's your practice? I said, I meditated a little bit, you know, it's kind of, you know, but whenever I meditate, it's pretty good, you know. But he says, where does compassion fit into your life? I said, you know, I don't know. So he says, why don't you just meditate on compassion for yourself? And I said, wow. And so that's my first practice, to have compassion for myself. But then how do I tap into that on a regular daily basis? I get up in the morning before I get to running around all that stuff, I go and I sit in my cushion. We got a little off in the corner. I go, I sit, I get my candles, I get the incense, and I do my prayers, and I sit and I go the whole ritual, you know. And I sit for at least 30 minutes or so. And I do that every single day. And also at the same time, because I just have to have compassion for yourself. Express compassion, feel compassion for yourself, Kenny. And also at the same time, I ask the question, what am I afraid of? Because once you keep asking yourself, what are you afraid of? Then you say, well, I ain't afraid of nothing, but just keep do it every day. Pretty soon you say, okay, well, I'm afraid of this. I'm afraid. Like this morning, I said, what am I afraid of? I'm afraid of dying. I'm afraid of my wife. This. I'm afraid of this. I'm afraid of this. Wow, man, a lot of the fears. So I acknowledged those fears before I just woke up, had my coffee or cookies or whatever, and went out the door fully afraid, fully unconscious. Because when I sat down, I said, what am I afraid of? And as I waited for the answers, you're afraid of this, you're afraid of that. Wow, okay. But I did my work before I went out in the world to do the work. Because when you do it out there in the real world, in the real time, guess what?
You better be ready.
If I hadn't done my work, I would have walked over to the car and it could have been ugly. She could have been afraid. It's dialed 911. Now I'm trying to hoof it to my car to get up out of the parking lot in Sonoma, California. How many black men in Sonoma, California? Not many. So he's a black guy. Yeah. There he is over there. You know, so I'm glad I do my practice, because my practice guides me. Because the truth is, we don't know everything. There's something of this mysterious force knows everything, and it's guiding us, it's working with us, it's there, and it's in us, and it's outside of us, and it sees everything, and hears everything, it knows everything. So when I stop in the morning, I tap into that. That which sees all, ears all, to hears all, and that is one with everything. So I don't know what your practice is if you have one. If you don't, I would advise you to get a practice. Because the satsang, having the awakening, is one thing. But then how do we live our day by day by day lives? You get up in the morning, you put your pants on, or whatever you do, your dress on, whatever you got, whatever the case may be, and you sit. Or you read, or you pray, or you whatever it is to turn your attention from out there to in here, to check in with yourself, get a lay of the land, then go into the world. That's how I live my life. I had the awakening experience in prison in 1994 or 1995 with my teacher Gangaji. That was then. But each day I have to wake up and reaffirm and reconfirm my practice, or my experience, or my awakening, or reconnect, regroup.
Remember. Did you meet her? Did she come to?
Yes, I was in federal prison, and she came to federal prison in 1994. And I got rearrested for the last time in my life, thank God. And I went to federal prison in Colorado, and she had Gangaji's foundation was in Boulder, Colorado, and she had volunteers that were coming to the Littleton prison. Remember Columbine, Littleton? We had a prison there, and she came there, and she visited us, and it was about, I don't know, 10 or 15 of us guys like this, and we heard the message, a few of us, and our lives changed. And she's in Hawaii now with her husband teaching, and people says, well, don't I have a connection? Don't I have this? The connection was the moment I met her and I had the awakening experience. That was it. Now anything else was just is like commentary on that experience. Once I had that, I didn't need Ganguji anymore. Because I had this. That is always here. Ganguji is not here, but this is here. And she pointed me toward this. And once I connected with this, then I no longer need her. Some people have to be with the guru for years and years and years and years to be with the guru in order to get whatever they're looking for. She doesn't, Ganguji doesn't have students like, you know, ashram and all that. She doesn't have that. She travels around the world sharing this message, and if you catch it, beautiful. If you don't, still beautiful. Because there's another one right behind her. There's plenty of teachers sharing this message. Plenty of them sharing it. Once you catch it, then what do you do with it? It's what I'm dealing with now. I caught the message, but now how do I use it to heal myself and to stay in a relationship, to stay married, to stay off drugs, or to stay on drugs, or stay off alcohol, or stay on alcohol, whatever the case may be.
Are you still in touch with any of the gentlemen that were with you when you first...
If you read the book called The Last Hustle, you read about a guy named Lil Pete.
Yeah.
Lil Pete, of all the players and the hustlers, and he's the one who got me into the game,
yeah.
And he's the one that calls, he calls every 6 months or 4 months, hey man, what you doing? I said, hanging out, good to talk to you. And we're talking, kick it, you know. Mm-hmm. Then another 6 months he'll call, just checking up on you, man, you know. Because he's a minister now, you know. Yeah, up in Illinois, Quincy, Illinois, somewhere up there. So he's a minister, and I'm ministering. It's amazing. I mean, it's just, of all the people, we was in boys' home together. We was in boys, 15 years old, we was in boys' home together. Now here he is, 50 years later, oh my God. 50 years later, we still friends. God, that's the longest friend I had. Man, wow. Besides my mother and my sisters. Wow. And we're still together. We're still. Now, I started working in prison. Okay? And then men and women was having awakening experiences or aha moments or in whatever the case, how you want to look at it. And I have one guy that stays, that we all stay in touch. And his name is Chatterbox, and he was in a state prison in San Quentin. And I was doing a program there. And one day he came in from the yard, he came to the group, he says, Kenny, I see what you're talking about. I get it. And I had been preaching, you know, you're one, there's nothing but this love, let go, be in the moment, blah, 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 blah. But day in and day out, and then finally he got it. And now he's out, he's married, and now he's going to therapy.
Wow.
Because when you get out of prison, you get out with the same messed up mentality. It's, that wound is still there. But how do you deal with it? How do you handle it? So you get married, you get a job, but it's still there. So he called me, he said, man, I left my wife, I moved out, I'm over here with so-and-so, so-and-so. I said, oh, man, well, okay, but I don't condone it, but, you know, I said, I went and got therapy, man. I mean, I'm cool. And next thing I know, he said, man, we're going to get therapy. So He's following my lead. You know, he got married before I did. I said, that was a bad mistake. Did not get married. So much for that. I said, why'd you get married? You already had everything. Why you gonna marry her? He said, because I promised I would marry her the day I got out of prison. Because she stuck by me in prison. And so, as soon as he got out, we were married. And they have been together, and I have seen them go through ups and downs, and in marriage, you know, I came in single, and my wife came in single. She came in with her entourage, I came in with my entourage. And Slowly, over the weeks and days and months and years, her entourage started falling away, my entourage starts falling away, and there were just us. Then maybe one of her friends and one of my friends. But then they had to fall away. And now it's just, there's no one between her. She had a girlfriend that was her best friend, and they were like chatting every day. And it was okay, but I said, I don't think she's really your friend. You know, I don't think, you know, because there was jungle buddies, you know, like prison buddies. But now you're here and you're married and things have to be different. So we started to rearrange our, what I'm saying is that our marriage and our lives, slowly, everything fell away. So it was the only thing left with just her and I. You know, all our, we got friends now and we all come back together. But everything had to fall away so that we could just face each other and see each other. I don't know if there's, was your, who's married in here? Okay. So, am I close to?
Sounds real.
You know, like.
It happens.
Yeah, it happens. And I'm like, I went to Colorado to do an interview with Guyam TV. So my daughter wanted to come and her husband came. Well, that was a fiasco. My daughter had this thing. She still had this daddy thing going, you know. And so her husband, he's not really into me, you know. He's not really, you know. And I'm not really into him, you know, being real about it, you know. And sure enough, that relationship had to slowly, you know, fall away, go back into it. I mean, my daughter and everything, her husband, we're no longer these talk on the phone all day long and, you know, email and text. We're no longer, because I'm married now. My primary relationship is my wife. I like that. And then you take that and then you slowly start building back, you know, your friends. So when we got sick, my best friend, my wife is from Spain, so she doesn't have any best friends here. Her best friend is in Spain, Madrid, or Barcelona, or whatever, you know. And so my best friend, she drove up from San Rafael, brought us a humidifier and some Thai food. And so she came up, and I went out, and I got it, and she said, "Stairway, here's the food bag." You know, so she didn't want to get sick, because she had cancer before, so she's really conscious of germs and bacteria and viruses and stuff like that. And so my wife said, "Wow, she is a good friend." Okay, so if my wife keep approving of our friends, they're okay. If she don't approve, they're not okay. So I realized that now we're slowly rebuilding our circle of friends and whatever. My first time really being married, committed. And so I'm having so many insights, awakenings, and let goes, and epiphanies, and aha moments, and shit, you know. Why did I do this? And damn, what was I thinking? And, you know. But those moments don't last long anymore. Yeah. You know, they used to be like, all day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I'm out of here. And you be confiding other people. Then I said, I'm here. I told her last night, I said, "Honey, we're married." And I said, "That says it all. I'm not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere. So we just relax. We figure it out." And she said, "Oh, yeah, we are." Yes, yeah. I said, "I ain't going nowhere. We're in this. This is it." But so when you take those vows, it really means something. Don't sound like it, but they really mean something. Whether it's male, female, it's the vows. Say, "I love you. I want to be with you. To death do us part. That's big. That's huge. Yes.
So I was wondering if you could talk a bit about boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe with people that you don't choose to be around, like
okay.
in marriage.
So okay. You don't have to mention any names, but give me a better scenario.
Right.
Okay.
So recently my mother fell on some really hard financial times.
Mm-hmm.
She's been asking me for money a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel bad because I'm in a much better situation financially than
yes.
she is.
Yes.
And so, but I'm at the same time judging her for the efforts that she is making or not making. And just like a lot of guilt, and I don't know like when is a good time to set the boundary or like when is a good time for me to be generous and share what I have, when am I enabling, and
okay, let's do this. I think about that a lot because my mom, she didn't have much, poor, but she gave everything. And so if my mother asked for something, it's not even an issue. Because when you was crying at 3 o'clock in the morning, it wasn't even an issue. You hear?
Mm-hmm.
She didn't smother you. She didn't deny you any milk. Say, I'm not giving you no tit tonight. But you crying too long. No, she said, here, boom. Matter of fact, she couldn't wait to give a tit to shut you up. So what you should do, oh, I like this. That's okay. Okay. We're cool. This is cool. Don't trip. Okay. But I want you to sweat a little bit. No, but think about it. This is mom's. She gave everything to you until you got to a certain age. Then she let you go. Now she said, honey, I got to call in some markers today. I'm not doing too good.
Is she calling in markers right now?
See? Okay, listen. I don't know how much she wants. I don't know how long she wants it.
Yeah.
But she's mom. All
right.
That's all I can say. I'm not going to even. That's she's mom's. You know, when I got out of prison this last time in 1997, my mother didn't ask me for anything. She didn't, because she saw in me something that had changed, and so she was happy. She didn't ask me nothing. She was like, he's done. I can relax. So your mother needs help right now to relax. That's all. I love the Spaniards. They have amazing wisdom. You don't have a country intact that many thousands of years and not have wisdom. You know, they did something right, you know. So my wife says, I've been sick and I ain't making no money. And she says, honey, mama said this. If it's a problem about money, it's not a problem. Because why? You can fix it. Money can fix it. So the problem isn't the money. You see what I'm saying? The money can fix it.
But I don't know if it can, though.
Huh? Money? No, okay. I mean, I don't know how long she's going to want it. What I'm saying is that it's money.
Mm-hmm.
But we have an attachment to it, and it means something. And then it's, I made it, I earned it, and you haven't done it, all those stories around it. And your mom said, hey, I need some money. 1,000, 2,000, 100, 2 million, whatever. See, I need some money. I ain't hitting on all cylinders. At one time I was doing great, but now, you know. And so, you know, back in the day, you used to have lots of babies so the babies could take care of the family. My mother had 7 of us, so she's cool.
Wow.
So she's cool. And I'm the oldest, so she's got all the rest of them there. They in Kansas City, they're taking care of. She's cool.
Wow.
There may be some deeper stuff going on. I ain't gonna get into that because no, this is not. But you know, but something. But from what I hear, money can fix it. Let the money fix it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I mean, it's just. You know, okay. I give you an example. Like now, I do satsang, I do a little tour, do a little books. I'm getting older. No, not too many people want to hear me talk. They want to see a younger guy, 20 years old, talk about a woman, whatever. And so my money making ability is kind of shaky here, you know. So
I don't agree with that.
Huh?
I don't agree with that.
I don't either.
Well, the reality is, I've traveled around the world, you know, and I had a lot of, you know, groups talk, people respond and not respond, but here it is. I'm like, okay, time for me to do something else. Okay, this is the booking thing that's not working. Okay, cool. I let it go. Because I'm of the mindset, I can let it go. If it's time to let it go, I let it go. So I let this world go. The satsang, the book, all that, I let it all go. Now I'm coming back into it. How? I don't know. This is one of my first meetings this year.
Oh.
So I'm slowly getting back into it. But at the same time, the money thing, I ain't going nowhere. I'm still working with you, okay? Okay, the money thing is the issue. So my wife says, don't worry about that, honey. If money can fix our problem, be cool. I said, yeah, but I got to do the shit. She says, get healthy first. Just worry about that. Don't, you know, be cool. So I said, okay, good. And so today, the other day I bought a car because I'm going to start doing Uber. So I bought me a car to do Uber. I had to get it fixed. I had to do this. So the guy, mechanics, man. Mechanics. You can't live without them. You can't live with them. And they stand there in front of you and say yes. And look at you and know that going well, they're going to rob you. Oof. So anyway, the guy says, man, leave the car here. It'll be ready in 5 days. I said, well, how much is the figure? He said, oh, $600. I said, okay, no problem. I said, okay. And I said, if he's true to his mechanic code, that car will be fixed by tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
If he's true to the mechanic's code. Sure enough, I get a call this afternoon. Your car's ready.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, what happened to the 3 or 5 days? Oh, no, see what I did. Sure. I had someone go over here and get this and get that. I said, yeah. He wanted to lock in the price first. Once he locked in the price, I'm going to give you $600. Now, how can I make $400 go in my pocket and $200 go into the parts? So I said, well, I paid for the knowledge and the experience to get the car done so I can be doing Uber by Saturday. So money can fix it. I've paid to get it done. And so what I'm saying, young lady, what's your name now?
Natalie.
Before you give her something, really get clear inside of you. You follow what I'm saying? Okay. Who understand what I'm talking about when I say get clear inside? You understand? Who else understand? You understand? Okay. Getting clear inside means this. Right now, you don't know what you should do. You're ambivalent. Before you give your mother a nickel or penny, get clear. Meditate on it. You don't have to talk to nobody else. It's out now. It's up. Now sit with it. Pray on it. Then, guess what? Tomorrow at 6 o'clock in the morning or evening, you must say, no problem. I can call mom and say, Mom, I'm not giving you a nickel ever again in life. Or, Mom, come on over. I got something for you. Because you'll be clear. So you'll be giving from clarity, not from ambivalence, anger, or guilt, or shame, or I should. You'll be giving from clarity with no thought of anything, but I want to give this. See, this I want to give. It'll be so clear. So don't even give. I'm going to give you my email address because I want you to email me and let me know how this turns out.
Okay.
But you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Just wait until you're clear. It might be tomorrow evening. It might be tomorrow night. Not what she wants you to do, but when you are clear. That way you can go to the bank, get the check, and feel good handing it off. Because what, here we go, here I'm going a little deeper. What I'm thinking is this. You need to get clear so you can set boundaries. Because you talked about boundaries, remember? Get clear before you set the boundaries. So you get clear, okay, now I know what I want to do. I'm open, I'm spacious, it's clear, I'm happy, I'm glad about it. I have no anger, there's no guilt, like I can pick the phone up and call her and be solid. So that's what you want, that's where you want to go. Then you set the boundaries. You haven't set the boundaries, so she'll run all over it, all over your. Because there's no boundaries. It's like you don't have a fence in your yard, so people just run all through your yard. You put a fence up there, a gate there, they can't run in and out because you created boundaries. So first get clear, then you can do however you go, the boundaries will automatically come. So this time, when you do or don't do, you have boundaries along with it. Say, Mom, this is what I'm doing, this is why I'm doing it, this is how I'm going to do it. Then Mom knows.
Mm-hmm.
She don't know yet. It's my daughter. She gonna. I just call her and she gonna do it.
Could I tell a little short story?
You may tell a short story.
I heard this from someone the other day. It was some kind of study that was done,
mm-hmm.
where they took a lot of fairly young children, maybe 10, 12, mm-hmm. and put them in this open field,
mm-hmm.
and just wide horizons, and they just set them out there and let them play.
Mm-hmm.
And within half an hour, it turned into people beating up each other. It turned out like, can't think of the movie. But anyway, it became vicious.
And mm-hmm,
they were hurting each other and
mm-hmm.
crying and everything.
Yeah.
So then what they did is they took the same field, they put a white picket fence around this area
mm-hmm.
and put the kids inside that.
Mm-hmm.
And they played fine and there weren't any problems.
Wow.
So just that,
boundary
made them feel safe. It totally that was such a strong message to me.
and those who did the studies already knew, but they had to actually
do
it to see that. Oh, there they go. Yep, that's what happened. Okay, now put a fence there. Boom, boundaries. Like my wife and I, we had to create boundaries. Like she said, don't do this shit, don't do that. At first, I was just taking it, I was whatever. Now we got boundaries and things. It's not, not rules, but that's boundaries. And it feels good. Like she says, I need this. She says, I need 2 hours every morning alone. I give her that. Because that makes, that prepares her for the day. If I interfere with that, then guess what? We're gonna be fighting. So I ain't gonna interfere with that. You know, cause she needs that. Now I don't come to the room. This morning I came in to give her a kiss and she was doing yoga. So she said, here, push up my hips, and now I'm doing yoga with her. I'm like, wait a minute, I come in to give you a kiss and I do yoga, and now she got me on the floor. I'm pushing on me and everything. I hurry up and got out of there. Thank you for that story, and thank you for your story also.
Thank you.
With sharing, you know. Yes.
You said earlier, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it made me resonate with something
mm-hmm.
that I've been discovering lately, is that I've always looked outside of me to be happy or to get the answers. And I'm starting to see that what you're talking about, and we have everything we need right here.
Everything.
Yeah.
Awareness, consciousness, inhabited your body, came here, inhabited this flesh. Spirit is in you. Spirit is what's holding you up. And so in order to connect with spirit, our egoic mind, our super ego, and on, all that stuff have to turn inward. Once you turn inward, now you're connecting to your true, authentic self. That which does not die. You're connecting to that. And that has all the answers, all the solutions, and all the guidance you ever, ever, ever need. You can talk to your husband, and all that. He has limited knowledge. He has to go somewhere. Then the person he goes, they have limited knowledge. They have to go somewhere. But it all ends somewhere. Here. So what I would advise or suggest is that look inside of you as much as possible by asking yourself, what's the right thing to do here? What should I do here? You see, just ask for guidance. Ask for clarity.
Yeah.
And it will give it to you. That's its job. The spirit that's taking care of this brother here is totally devoted and dedicated to him. And will do everything in the world to make sure he stays alive and on this planet. That's his duty, is to serve him. So this spirit, this energy, this awareness that's in you, which has no form but does have a form because you are the form, but it's formless. But it's also aware of everything that you need and is waiting for you to come to it. And if you don't, you know what's going to happen if you don't. You start getting, your life start getting more and more screwed up until you start listening. It's here to serve you. It's here to guide you, to protect you, and to care for you. So my question, to you, how are you going to now you had this insight. I told someone the other day, I said, she says, oh, he had an awakening, he had insights. Insights and awakenings is cool. You have them all damn day long. But you have the insight, Now what are you going to do to go inside? You follow what I'm saying? Now how are you going to support that practice? How are you going to support that awakening, that aha moment, that insight? How are you going to support that? You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do? Yoga, Qigong, whatever, acupuncture, whatever. Walking around the block. My wife said she went to Vipassana, and the 26 days of Vipassana, and first it was 15 minutes of meditation and 50 minutes of walking, then 20 minutes of meditation, 20 minutes of walking. Pretty soon it was on and kept getting more and more and more. So what are you going to do?
Meditation keeps coming up for me.
Done. Don't even second guess. Now put together a practice, and I would say in the morning. And if you can't do it yourself, then find an ashram or a group or something that's doing it to support you for a minute. Then you take your practice home. Because where the rubber meets the road is when you can do your practice, when you get up in the morning and you go and you sit with yourself and be with yourself. Like I said, like, what am I afraid of? That's all this anger and fear. Whoa, man, okay. Let me sit with this. And so you can get up in the morning, or however you want to do it, and just do your practice for 20 minutes, 15 minutes, or 30 minutes. It doesn't, it's not the time, it's the intention. Mm-hmm. When you turn toward consciousness, consciousness is already looking at you. It's already ready. You know what I mean, I'm waiting. I've been waiting. This is the way. No, girl. Okay, whenever she get around to it, I'll be here. I got eternity. I got eternity just to hang out here. I ain't going nowhere. So it's waiting on you to come to it, to guide you, nourish you. And then you'll start listening. And when you get those insights and aha moments, act upon them. Don't let them die with on the vine. Because you didn't do anything. You follow what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like you know now to meditate. So if you don't follow up, guess what? Consciousness will keep coming at you because you're not doing what you know you're supposed to do in order to stay connected to it. They say that God is a jealous God, and it will have no other gods before it. So he cannot be your God. Even though you might want him to be there, he can't be at all. I can't be everything you want in a teacher or a friend. There's only one true friend, teacher, lover, guy, and that's inside of you. And everything is pointing toward that. The woman was stepping on the gas, boom! There was a word that said, "Wake up, Kenny." I don't want to wake up. I want to be mad. Now wake up and keep going, because if you walk over there, she might call the cops on you. Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay, let me keep on going. That's not a good decision there. No, I ain't that angry. I'm not that mad. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because you're gonna be every day you're gonna be confronted with something. Can I let this go? How do I deal with this?
The answers are in
there. Mm-hmm. And so my thing around money and getting a new life, a new career is like, okay, I was buying and selling cars for the longest, about 3 years. I was in Oakland buying and selling cars. Oh my God, this thing I seen and did. Oakland gave me a good education about the car business. So now I said, well, I always buy a car to, you know, salvage. I go to salvage yards and buy cars and work with mechanics, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I'm pretty comfortable with that world. I'm not afraid to pull the trigger, buy a car if I think it's a good car, even though it could be kind of shaky. I trust my ability to sell something once I buy it. But now, I put all of my energies into buying a car, keeping another car for my wife, and she got a scooter. I don't know why. And she and I am now doing Uber. And it's kind of exciting because I used to drive limousine when I first came out here to California. For 5 years, I drove a limousine from Emory. All up and down the whole Bay Area. I was all over, everywhere. Long limousines, a little shorter, everything. And so now, here it is, I don't know, 10 years later, and Lyft, Uber. I said, wait a minute. I can get my own business here. Oh. And I like driving for people. I like picking people up. I like taking the airport. I like that. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to start doing Uber. So I'm excited now about, you know, I got my own little career. I can buy cars. I can do the talks. So I got a number of income streams of income coming in. The words, I don't have to depend on one thing. I can turn my app on. And if I turn my app on now, somebody going to say, beep, 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 beep. And so what I'm saying is that I kept looking inside, I need to find something that can fit my age, my disposition, for as money as income. And so when this came online, I said, oh, I can do this. And it makes, I can, if I don't feel like going to Craigslist, buying a car, going to Copart's and walking through that big old lot trying to find a car, I just get in, could drive, pick somebody up, and just do that for 3 or 4 hours, I made me a couple $100. So this is exciting for me because I have a number of ways to take care of the family, and I don't have to just depend on just this or just the book or prison work, because that was really quite stressful, because I was steady working to raise funds, donations, and you know, and sometimes people are happy with their loose with their money, sometimes they're tight with it. I have found that lately, for me, money has been drying up, so I need to find, and it's just consciousness is just saying, okay, look over here. Okay, look over here. It's just guiding me, but I listen, and I'm okay, and I'm not ashamed. Like, whatever consciousness wants me to do, I'm okay. Because I'm a winner. When I walked out of prison in 1997, I won. I was done. Prison was my kryptonite. So now this is all gravy, and the long as I keep that attitude, things work out for me. The moment I get bitter and I hate, then my life is going to get bitter. So keep looking inside, get your practice, however you can get your meditation practice together, and do it for 30 days solid, whatever it is, solid. What happens after the 30 days, boom, you got a lifestyle. They say it takes 21 days, you know, to create a whole new, and that's true, I've proved it so many times. So for 3 weeks, meditate every single day with a group or whatever. At the same time, everything. And you'll be amazed at how your life has. You have the problems, but you study like you're on cruise. You're on cruise. You have bumps, still on cruise. You have a sweet soul. You have a sweet heart.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I can feel it. I can see it. My wife wanted to come this evening. I went and picked her up, but she's still, like I said, she's still trying to get herself together health wise. And so I said, "Won't you just go home?" I go with you now. You want the support? I said, "Listen, some dependent people supporting me. You go home and you support yourself. Go home, unwind, turn the TV on, make your tea, whatever." Take care of yourself. And I'm so happy I didn't, you know, force her or push her or say, come on, you know. But She said, whew. She couldn't wait to get and lay down, because I know she'd been working all day. She was, and she's still dealing with her health issues, you know. But that's how I met my wife, was in a group like this. Just like this. In Bali. Yes. Nothing.
Well, I did have this burning question.
Okay.
What was it that that changed in you?
Oh, okay. I when I met my teacher Gangaji out of the federal prison in 1994, and when she came in that year, I still had some hustles I wanted to do. I said, well, I'm gonna get out of prison in 2 years, and I'm gonna go out, I'm gonna cash a bunch of checks, and get me a little house and a wife, and I'm done. Well, my teacher came, Gangaji came in, when I was in that mindset. And in that meeting, I just had this, I was just feeling relaxed. That's all I know. And then, after the meeting, I started looking at people, and I started, wait a minute. I started looking at people's eyes, I started seeing the same thing. And I said, And so, I went home that night. To my cell in prison, my bunk. I went to my cell that night. Lord have mercy. That was home. I went home that night. to my palace. All 25 square feet of it. Top to bottom. I laid in my bunk and I closed my eyes, and the rest of the night I could just hear a humming sound. Never stopped, continued to humming sound. And at the same time, I'm lying there and I'm just watching all of these thoughts and emotions, and it's going. It's like a light show, like a shooting star show. Like, wow, man, ooh. And I'm just watching these thoughts. I can't grab one. I was just watching them. Wow, man. Oh. I got up the next morning. I go to breakfast. I worked in an office where there's a microfiche room where it was dark, and I was a microfiche guy. I couldn't wait to get to work. Hey, boss, how you doing? I said hello to her. I went to my microfiche room, shut the door, didn't come out until noon. Because I went to, like, I had the microfiche machine on. I said, bum. Okay, it's noon. Kitty, come on, let's go. I went to go eat, come back, microfiche room. To 4 o'clock, time to go home. So a guy started coming, man, what are you doing in there, man? I go in every day, and that's my job. I said, man, I'm just chilling, man. Wow, man, what's happening? That old hustler mindset slowly was being washed away. Whereas I didn't want to steal, I didn't want to do nothing. I just wanted to sit and be still, sit and be quiet. So that criminal mind was taken from me. And a steel mind was replaced. So when I was laying there in bed, that's the insight, epiphany, all those criminal thoughts and ideas was leaving. They were gone. They was fleeing. This house is no longer suitable for us, y'all. We're criminals, we're thieves, we're murderers. He didn't got religion. We out of here. He done found God. We need to find somebody. You know, you read about it in the Bible, the spirits leave and they go out trying to look for some place to hang out. Well, those spirits left me. Those spirits left me. You understand?
Yeah.
Did that answer your question?
I think it did, yeah.
Is it still burning?
I'm just wondering, okay. Was there anything that Gangaji said?
Was,
you know,
The
aha.
Ah, okay. You're right. Did you read my book? You must have read my book, because you're good. Okay, yeah. Okay. She said, Kenny, I've been thinking about you. Huh? Any woman thinking about me, gotta be a good thing. I said, yes. And she said, you think that you're a black man, you think you're a convict, you think you're the father of your daughter. You're none of these things. And when she said that, I'm like, well, if I'm none of these, then what am I? So that was the conversation. That was it. And so her just saying that, well, I'm black, I'm a convict, and I'm a father. All those things were facts. She said, no, but you're none of those things. She just negated all of it, and she was serious about it. I said, well, maybe I should find out what she really talking about. And that was the investigation. That was the looking, the word, and blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That was the initiation onto the path.
Right.
That was it. Just initiating on the path of millions of let goes that has to happen. You follow what I'm saying? Millions of let goes.
Thank you.
It has to happen.
Yes, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Excuse me for coughing, but I got a little tickle in my throat.
Anything to say about judgment?
Judgment. In what way?
Judging people, judging state of the world, judging.
Gosh. Yeah, I do.
Don't do it.
Go to CNN and watch the news. You see all the judges and everything. Watch the Republican debate. Oh. Watch the Democrats. See what Obama is talking about, Steve. You got plenty of things to judge, to critique and blame. But what if you don't touch any of them? What if they're okay just as they are? Because they really are. So, your practice or your work is to see how your mind is constantly categorizing, judging, blaming, labeling, figuring out. What are you? Do you know what you are on the Enneagram? Yeah.
A judger.
A judger, maybe a one. Yeah, one. Ones are judges. Yeah, it's not a bad thing, but it's a bad thing if you dump it on her or you dump it on other people. You can judge all day long. But do it in your head.
He does.
Huh?
He does.
Yeah. Too much time.
You too.
You too? Oh boy, y'all need to get out of here. Okay, so y'all need a referee then. You need an umpire. You need an umpire between you all.
No, we both do it together.
I know, I'm just saying, but you know, I mean,
share it.
Y'all need y'all share. So it's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's a big one for you all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like the wheat was a big one for our marriage. The wheat, you know, the gluten, my wife, that's a big one for us.
Right.
You know, she won't listen to me. She won't let me fix her. Damn it. And so you all got this judging thing going on here. It's something, we all have something, so you got this judging thing. So what are you going to do with it?
It's really painful, too.
Yeah, of course it's painful.
for me anyway.
Yeah, this course is painful, yeah. Because as you're judging, you're looking out. You say, oh, that's right, that's not right, that's not right. I need to fix this here. Oh, this is, you can do it forever. But if you turn yourself in and look at yourself, say, man, look at you, look at, man, come on, get, wow, you just, man, you just, oh, wow, okay. Then you're doing your own work.
I judge myself pretty well, too.
Well, there's none but you anyway. There's no other, as Ramana Maharshi said, there's no other.
Right.
So all your judgment is, so how are you gonna, what are you gonna do? Because it's a problem. It really is, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's suffering now.
Right.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Now you're suffering. You're suffering. Do you know the Enneagram?
I figured out my number
before. I tell you what. I mean, I'm just.
I think we should do it.
I think y'all should look at the Enneagram. See, because then you understand how this machine operates. Remember, I told you as an eight, I know I go to the back of the room. It's, oh, yeah, I know what she's talking about. Yeah. Okay. Then I leave early. Because I already know everything. But I know that about me. So the more we understand this operating system, the more we're okay with it. The less we understand it, then the less we're okay with it. So both of you all have a job to do. Go to the bookstore, Copperfields.
Yeah.
Or
Eli has some good books.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Eli. Enneagram, Amazon, wherever you buy your books. Where you get your books from? In the Kindle?
Right here.
Mini Rivers Bookstore.
We have an Enneagram section.
He has the Enneagram section. There you go. So you have to go no further. Anyway, you get a discount if you buy tonight.
The
KJ discount. What did Rob say? The Kenny Johnson discount. Only tonight.
The KJ
discount. Mm. Awesome. But no care.
Huh? He's a hustle. No judgment.
See?
He's a hustle.
We can't even stop, can we? This shit is insidious. Rob, hurry up and get that man a book. Matter of fact, whatever donations I get, I'll pay for his, okay? Woo, man! Wow. It's insidious, you see what I'm saying? And it's not going to stop until you start working with it. Because it keeps coming up saying, man, come on, man, pay me attention. I'm the judge here, man. Understand me. Know what the judge does and know the rules of judge. Why judges need to be a judge. I'm a judge, man. Why am I? Understand me. So your job is to understand the judge that's in you. Okay, a woman told me today, she called me for a session, but really she gave me a session because I said, I've been sick of it. I've been up and down, blah, blah, blah. She says, don't try to fix your wife, Kenny. Fix yourself, and she'll come along. Start eating healthy. Start doing all the right things, and she'll come along. Like, first we were doing coffee and cookies together and all that stuff. Now, I'm done with the coffee and cookies. That ain't happening no more. You know, so now she says, my wife came home. She says, I'd do anything now to get rid of this. I said, maybe I have Marilyn talk to her and fix it. You know, I'm constantly, as you the judge, I'm still Mr. Fix It. But Mr. Fix It now is using a little wisdom. Fix yourself and that just vibrates out. I got to fix her. Fix you first, Mr. Judge. And that just automatically translates to, so wait a minute, my husband? Because what I'm noticing that our wives and we marry each other because we want to be with each other and we are one. And if you get healthy, she gets healthy. You get unhealthy, she gets unhealthy. It's all one because you're tied together energetically now. When she got sick, I got sick.
Really?
Soon she got sick, I got sick. I said, dang, we all one. Shit. So I better hurry up and change it because she get the pneumonia, she get the whatever, the cancer, I'm gone. So I realized this, okay, now my job is to start taking care of myself and not try to take care of her. And just tell her what I'm doing. Hey, honey, I'm doing a juice this morning. I got some kale, I got some chard, it's some spinach, it's some apple juice, and a little ginger and the cayenne pepper. You want some? And see myself, nah, I take my coffee and my cookies. Then the next morning, I had to keep doing it. Mr. Hook.
I just want to say one thing.
Go ahead.
Oh, please.
Go ahead.
When I dropped in after the help, I asked my, his voice came and said, what does she want? What does the judge want? Find out what she really wants.
There you go. See?
Started.
Yeah. Now. Now you have the insight, the aha. No, you start the aha, the insight, but now it's the follow through.
Yep.
You got that. What does she want? Now, how are you going to answer that? That you have to do the work to find out what does she want.
I got it.
Okay. I can't help but being silly.
So, I want to point out, we have not just the Last Hustle book, but we also have some DVDs that are available as well of Kenny. There's a donation bowl over there. We encourage you to contribute to it generously. And I want to thank you all for coming, and hope you will come back. And I know, do you need a piece of paper for an email or something like that?
Yeah, those who want to stay in touch with me, Rob will give you paper, or we can do it right here.
Yeah.
It's so few of you, I'd love to give everybody a hug, you know.
Totally.
Starting with you.
Oh, all right.
Thank you so much.
I was supposed to come.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you so much.
Hey,
buddy.
Right there.
Yeah. Beautiful.
So, blessings on you and your wife.
Thank you.
And all you love.
Thank you.
Share your wisdom.
Thank you.
Much abundance comes to you through.
Oh.
I'll be right there.
I'm coming.
right, brother.
So do you want to come over?
That's the main thing.
Yeah,
yeah.